Welcome to Notes on Nursing Live, compelling interviews with today's nurses who are changing healthcare. Brought to you by Johnson & Johnson. Notes on Nursing Live, presented by Johnson & Johnson, is the podcast extension of the national bi-monthly e-digest Notes on Nursing, which shines a spotlight on nurses as innovators and critical change makers in the delivery of positive patient outcomes within today's healthcare landscape. You can subscribe to receive Notes on Nursing updates at the Johnson & Johnson Nursing website, nursing.jnj.com. Every month, Notes on Nursing content is accompanied by two episodes of this podcast, which provides greater insights and nurse perspectives into topics discussed in the e-digest. You can listen to previous episodes of Notes on Nursing Live on the podcast player at nursing.jnj.com, and don't forget to subscribe to the entire series on iTunes. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. In this episode of Notes on Nursing Live, I interview Margaret Gurowitz, the chief historian at Johnson & Johnson. Margaret is responsible for bringing to life the heritage of Johnson & Johnson for employees and the public, and she curates exhibits in Johnson & Johnson Our Story at the Powerhouse, the company's museum, located on the Johnson & Johnson World Headquarters campus in New Brunswick, New Jersey. In this episode, we chat about the history of Johnson & Johnson's support for the nursing profession and innovative nurses for over 120 years, from the days of Florence Nightingale to the present day. Hi, Margaret. I want to welcome you to Notes on Nursing Live. It's great to have you here with us today. And I thought we'd try to jump in with finding out a little bit about your background. You're a little bit different than our typical guest on the show, but in an important way. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what your current job is?
Absolutely. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for including me. It's great to be on the podcast. So I am the chief historian of Johnson & Johnson. My background is in history. I have undergraduate and graduate degrees in history. And I originally got to Johnson & Johnson with a summer job doing historical research for a biography of General Robert Wood Johnson, who's one of the company's historical leaders. When I was still in college, I've been here ever since.
That's fascinating. So when you're as the cheapest historian for Johnson & Johnson, what is your task? What does your job there entail?
So as chief historian, I tell stories from Johnson & Johnson's history to bring the heritage of the company to life for employees and for the public. So we have really good archives here at Johnson & Johnson. So I research in our archives and external archives to tell these stories that illustrate the company's history of pioneering innovations to help care for people from the past to the present. I also curate exhibits in our museum, which is called Johnson & Johnson, Our Story at the Powerhouse. It's located on our World Headquarters campus in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and on our online museum website called Our Story. And I also write the company's history blog, which is called Kilmer House. And if anyone's on Twitter, they can follow me at J&J History.
So many nurses know about J&J as a strong supporter of nurses through programs like this one and the initiatives like the Campaign for Nursing. But I don't think they understand that the company comes to that place from a long history of support for nursing. Can you tell us a little bit about how that really began, dating all the way back to the late 1800s?
Absolutely. Like the modern profession of nursing, Johnson & Johnson was also founded in the 1800s with the purpose of changing healthcare and caring for people. So Johnson & Johnson was founded in 1886 by three brothers to make the first mass-produced sterile surgical dressings and sterile sutures to help make surgery sterile and survivable for patients in American hospitals. And the roots of the founding, just as the founding of the modern profession of nursing go back to Florence Nightingale and the Crimean War, the original roots of the that led up to the founding of Johnson & Johnson go back to the American Civil War, and the way that injuries were treated. So back then in the 1800s, surgery was not sterile. Most surgeons operated in their street clothing. They wore these long black frock coats, which they never cleaned, and they did not wash their hands because they had no idea what caused infection. Instead of sterile surgical dressings, they used rags or non-sterile fabric to dress wounds and incisions. And instead of sterile sutures, a lot of them used ordinary sewing needles and sewing thread. And then they stuck that needle and thread in the lapel of their filthy frock coat, and they reused that same needle and thread on patient after patient after patient. So needless to say, surgery was not something that people were eager to experience, and surgical survival rates, surgical infection rates were astronomical, were through the roof, and surgical survival rates were not tremendously high. So one of Johnson & Johnson's founders in 1876 went to a talk by Sir Joseph Lister, the English surgeon who did the first ever sterile surgery, and he was inspired by Lister's talk to make the first mass-produced sterile surgical products to help make surgery sterile. So that's the initial founding of Johnson & Johnson. The company also pioneered sterile commercial wound care products with the first commercial first aid kits in 1888, and these all would have been products used by nurses. Additionally, Johnson & Johnson also employed nurses. They were employees at the company, too. So to make our life-saving sterile surgical products, Johnson & Johnson had to pioneer sterile manufacturing. It had never been done before, so we created the first sterile manufacturing clean room, and a nurse played a key role in that. In 1897, we had an employee named Elizabeth Washam. She was the head nurse in our aseptic department, which was the sterile manufacturing department. Elizabeth was a graduate of the Red Cross Hospital Training School in New York, which had been founded to train nurses as part of Clara Barton's new American Red Cross. And so in this era where a lot of surgeons were skeptical about sterile surgery, they thought it was a fad, they still operated in street clothing without washing their hands, employees in the Johnson & Johnson aseptic department were the first in industry to wear sterile uniforms, and they scrubbed in like modern surgeons before entering the sterile environment. If they left that room for any reason, they had to put on a fresh sterile uniform and scrub in again. To qualify to work in that room, they had to read textbooks on surgery, on infection and asepsis, visit hospitals, and pass a training course. And so all of this was Elizabeth Washam, the head nurse of that department, was in charge of ensuring that the aseptic department employees adhered to these strict rules for asepsis. That was one of her main responsibilities. Another responsibility she had was she was the only other person at Johnson & Johnson, aside from our scientific director, Fred Kilmer, who was authorized to sign her name to the sterility seals on the packages of Johnson & Johnson sterile surgical dressings, which was a position of great responsibility. Those seals on the top of those packages were the company's guarantee to doctors and nurses that the products in the packages were sterile. So that was a position of tremendous responsibility that Elizabeth Washam had at Johnson & Johnson. So Elizabeth was one of a number of nurses who worked here at the time. Unfortunately, we don't have the names of the other nurses in our archives, but, you know, clearly she and the other nurses would have impressed on the company sort of the tremendous capabilities and creativity and innovation of nurses and all that they did. And that led, based on that early respect for nurses, working side by side with them and making these products that they used, our chief scientist, Fred Kilmer, would go on later to donate a library to the St. Peter's Hospital School of Nursing in New Brunswick and also volunteer as a member of the faculty there.
And not only did they have nurses involved in the processes right there and their facility, but they also supported nurses in the field with these sterile kits. And also, I think they made one of the first maternity kits, correct?
Absolutely. So in the 1800s, most babies were born at home, not in hospitals as they are today. And as strange as it might sound to us, at that time, the expectant parents were responsible for figuring out what medical supplies they might need for childbirth and buying them themselves. If you had a doctor, the doctor would just show up. You were supposed to supply the equipment. Most of the time, people had maybe a midwife or neighbors as birth attendants. And of course, neighbors didn't have any kind of medical or childbirth training. And there was a much higher incidence of infant and maternal mortality around childbirth. So in 1894, Johnson & Johnson collaborated with a leading obstetrician of the day to create what we called maternity kits and put them on the market. The company made two types of kits, a smaller one and a larger one. And what they were was everything in a box that the birth attendants would need to ensure safe delivery for the mother and baby. So sterile dressings, sterile drapes, sterile sutures, antiseptic soap and a nail brush so the birth attendants could clean their hands, whatever was needed on the chart so that accurate birth records could be kept, whatever was needed for childbirth, the company made sure was in those boxes. And these things would have been used quite frequently by nurses and nurse midwives to help safely deliver a baby.
So as we move forward to World War I and beyond, there was a nurse, Catherine Hannon, who was listed on the history website at Johnson & Johnson as the first female employee to volunteer during World War I, and she continued working with the Army afterwards. Can you tell us a little bit about how her experience at Johnson & Johnson helped her in her future endeavors and some of the things she encountered after she left?
Oh, absolutely. So Catherine Hannon was actually a second-generation Johnson & Johnson employee. Her father also worked here as well. She was a nurse by training. She graduated from the St. Francis Hospital Training School for Nurses in Trenton, New Jersey in 1910, but she worked in the advertising department at Johnson & Johnson. We don't have records on what exactly she did there, but it seems that she wasn't using her nursing training at Johnson & Johnson specifically, or that we know about. But when the United States entered World War I in October of 1917, the American Red Cross issued an appeal for trained nurses, and Catherine volunteered as a U.S. Army nurse. She was assigned to the training hospital at Fort McPherson, Georgia, and her talents as a nurse and her training and leadership skills earned her promotion to superintendent of the hospital, which served apparently about 1,500 patients, and Catherine was in charge of more than 100 nurses there. During her time at Fort McPherson, Catherine's team of nurses presented her with a silver cup as a token of their admiration and gratitude. We actually have that cup in the Johnson & Johnson archives. Her family donated it to us about a year or so ago, and it shows the high regard that everyone at the hospital had for Catherine. In the fall of 1918, the American Red Cross sent nurses to Siberia, and they chose Catherine to organize a company of nurses and take them there, which was a really tough assignment. Most nursing assignments during World War I were two-year assignments, but Siberia was so tough that it was reduced to a year assignment, and then the nurses would spend their second year of the assignment somewhere else. So Catherine and her team arrived in Siberia on November 4th in 1918, just a week before the armistice was signed. But American troops stayed in Siberia for a while after the war ended, and the nurses stayed with them. So she was the chief nurse at Evacuation Hospital number 17 in Vladivostok, Siberia. And Catherine and her team of nurses displayed extreme courage treating soldiers during the deadly 1918 influenza epidemic, which caused more loss of life than the war did. Catherine said that in the first 10 days of December in 1918, they actually lost more troops to influenza than they had lost the entire year from other causes. So after their assignment was up, Catherine personally escorted all of her nurses back to safety in the United States at a time of great political instability and insecurity in Russia after the Russian Revolution. Catherine ended up not coming back to Johnson & Johnson. She actually continued her career in nursing in the U.S. Army. And she was made an Army captain in 1920, and then she continued her career in California and then Maryland. But that same year in 1920, New Brunswick, which was her hometown, was so proud of her that the local newspaper listed Catherine Hannon as one of New Brunswick's most prominent nurses. So Johnson & Johnson had some very strong early women leaders. In 1908, 8 of the company's 36 departments, including our sterile surgical department, were supervised by women. So Catherine would have known many of these women when she was at Johnson & Johnson, and they provided incredible examples of leadership. The company also recognized and rewarded ideas from employees because Johnson & Johnson was focused on innovation in the service of caring for people, as we are today. So the experiences that Catherine had at Johnson & Johnson, including the knowledge she would have had about the latest innovations in sterile surgical products and sterile wound care products and infectious disease prevention and early public health products at Johnson & Johnson would have helped her immensely in her career in nursing. And clearly, from the record of her career, we can see that she had incredible leadership skills.
And Johnson & Johnson, over the years since then, has been really integral in helping nurses throughout the history later in the United States with scholarships and other things like that to support nurses and innovation. Can you talk a little bit about how that changed and advanced over the years?
So Johnson & Johnson has supported nursing education and leadership since for a long time. As I had mentioned before that our first chief scientific officer, Fred Kilmer, helped in founding the School of Nursing in New Brunswick at St. Peter's Hospital, served as a member of the instructional staff. He donated classrooms with scientific and academic materials and a library for the nursing school. General Robert Wood Johnson, who led Johnson & Johnson for many decades and was the author of the company's credo, was also a lifelong supporter of nurses. And he felt that nurses should be given a higher professional status than they were accorded at the earlier part of the 20th century. So he sponsored several programs and scholarships to elevate the professional status of nurses. And one of his ideas eventually became the Johnson & Johnson Wharton School Fellows Program in Management for Nurse Executives, which was the leading program of its kind in the United States. Another idea of his was a refresher course for nurses returning from time away, designed to increase numbers of the nursing workforce. And so in the 1950s, also to address a nursing shortage, Johnson & Johnson helped fund scholarships for nurses. And then in 2002, there was a nationwide nursing shortage of 500,000 nurses in the U.S. Projected. And Johnson & Johnson stepped up and created the Campaign for Nursing's Future to inspire more people to pursue a career in nursing. And the company's support, you know, continues today in many, many ways.
And that's really how this podcast got started. So people that are listening to this show, really, it came about from a long history of support for nurses and nursing projects and innovation over the years from Johnson & Johnson. I was really fascinated to look over the company's history website, and I think other folks might want to do the same. Can you just tell us how they can find it online and what they might find there?
You can find our history website at ourstory.jnj.com, and you can find a timeline of the company's history, video stories that talk about how we're currently saving and improving lives and working with partners around the world, and multimedia stories that dive deeply into topics like the founding of Johnson & Johnson, the company's values, our more than a century of support for women, our role in leading in public health, and more.
Stay tuned for more new episodes here on Notes on Nursing Live coming soon, and check out another recent episode where I interview nurse and innovative app developer Rebecca Kozolinski. Rebecca is an assistant professor at the University of Tennessee Knoxville College of Nursing and inventor of the Speak for Myself app. Check out that and other episodes of Notes on Nursing Live in the podcast area on iTunes, as well as our podcast player on nursing.jnj.com. Also this month, you can catch brand new Johnson & Johnson nursing commercials on TV throughout the weeks of September 17th and 24th, which will highlight Johnson & Johnson's 120-year commitment to nurses and the innovative work that nurses have been doing throughout history to change human health. Find out more on nursing.jnj.com. Notes on Nursing Live is recorded for the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing by Medicast Productions. All rights reserved.